This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This week, many of us learned a new word, glioma. It's a type of malignant brain tumor, and on Tuesday, news broke that Senator Ted Kennedy has one. Since then, we've received a crash course in brain tumors. We've seen cross-sections of what Kennedy's brain might look like, and we've heard about his treatment options. Whether he and his family likes it or not, Senator Kennedy's illness is a very public story, which often happens with celebrities. Some do their best to preserve their privacy. Others choose to embrace the inevitable and use public interest in their illness as an opportunity, as a teachable moment. In just a moment, Elizabeth Edwards joins us. We also want to hear your stories. How have you dealt with the decision to let other people know about your illness? Does it help at all to learn that a famous actor or politician has the same illness that you do? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also share your story on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Elizabeth Edwards joins us on the line from Chapel Hill in North Carolina, and it's nice to have you back on the program.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
And if you would, take us back to, it was a day in 2004, the day that your husband, John Edwards, and Senator John Kerry conceded the presidential race.
I had suspicions at that time already that a lump that I'd found in my breast during the campaign was going to turn out to be cancer, but immediately after Senator Kerry did his concession speech, we went to Mass General Hospital and had a biopsy done and found out that, in fact, it was. We then, of course, had to return to our home in Washington, D.C. That night, and the way I made the decision that we would, in fact, go public with this. I was going to lose my hair. I wasn't much of a public figure, but I was enough of one that my losing my hair was going to mean that it was going to be a harder secret to keep.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and said, just we'll go ahead and do this. I actually didn't think of my place in a long string of people, known and unknown, who have this disease. I since think of myself very much that way, and that we sort of hold each other's hands in this long chain. And my being public sort of allowed people to reach out to somebody. And I did get those hands reaching out to me, largely people who suffer from cancer. And so I sort of feel like this is a tribute to the people who came before me and who reached their hands to me, both by participating in research and being strong themselves. And then I have an obligation now to do that to my brothers, for my brothers and sisters as well.
But was there a moment when you said, "Look, can't I keep this private?"
Honestly, there wasn't. I grew up in a household that was a very open household, and John and I have always had a very open home where we have very few secrets from anyone. I always say there's a bunch of 28-year-old boys running around who've seen me in every nightgown I own. So I wasn't particularly private to begin with, and politics kind of cures you a little bit of that anyway. People want to peer in your closets, and you sort of make a bargain that you're going to let them. And this, there was in it also the possibility of a teachable moment and to tell people not to make the mistakes I made, to go ahead and have their mammograms in a timely way and do their monthly self-exams. And in fact, one of the first emails I got was from a woman who had gone and gotten her self-checked immediately after a hearing of me and found, in fact, that she did have a cancerous tumor and she was already getting treatment. So, whatever the bad sides were, I have this woman's life as a reason to have made the public statement.
I guess simple coincidence that it was in Massachusetts General, the same hospital where Senator Kennedy is.
And it is, but I have very good treatment there, and I'm certain that he will get the same.
I wonder, though, was there? What did you think when you saw those stories on the news last Tuesday? We're seeing cross sections of Senator Kennedy's head.
It broke my heart because he, as it does with anybody, but particularly when you see somebody who is so vital, who embraces life in the huge way that he does, it just seemed, and particularly all he's been through, it seems so grossly unfair. On the other hand, this is an equal opportunity disease. It doesn't really care, how much you have to live for, how much fight you have in you. It can strike anybody. And this time it struck somebody who I think in the 10 days before that, I testified on the new cancer bill that he's introducing in the Senate with Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson, from Republican from Texas. So it was almost a cruel irony. In addition, it was hard not to look back at that hearing. I spoke with, my panel was Lance Armstrong, who had testicular cancer that spread to his brain, and me with breast cancer that spread to my bones, and Steve Case, whose brother died, in fact, of a brain tumor.
Let's see if we can get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our guest, of course, is Elizabeth Edwards. We're talking about illness, about a public illness. And if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, email us, talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can begin with Kathy. Kathy's with us from Royal Oak in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I had diagnosed in April 3 years ago, grade 4 glioblastoma, was given no time to live. But my work is as a healer. And a whole lot of people knew about it and started praying for me. And I'll tell you, that's so significant. So I'm thinking the more people that know about it, the better. It's over 3 years. I do have some challenges with my balance and stuff, but I don't have any more glio. So that people can recover. That brings up all those things. Oh, God, what if I'm wrong, you know. But anybody who has a history of cancer makes your stomach go wiggly. But, you know, I have a healthy background. I don't know if, well, one of my girls is a colonel in the Army, and she said, well, Mom, I guess it wasn't your day to die. So I guess, you know, if it's Ted Kennedy's day to die, it'll be his day to die. But I'm telling you, the more prayers that we can send to people with cancer, it absolutely makes a difference. That's why I'm well, I swear it.
Elizabeth Edwards, that kind of support, I know, has flowed to you as well.
It has, I think attitude is everything, as Kathy said. But I actually think that people with great fighting attitudes die of these diseases all the time. And I don't want to say, oh, they died because they didn't have enough fight in them. I think they did. It's just the disease is sometimes stronger than any person could possibly be. I'm glad it was not the case with Kathy. Hope it is not the case with Senator Kennedy. But I did feel that the fight was made easier because I felt I had a huge safety net of people who were ready to catch me in the bad moments. And I think that did allow me an additional level of strength because the treatments for these things are debilitating and difficult. About the same time that I was getting my treatment, Melissa Etheridge was also getting treated for breast cancer, and she stopped her chemotherapy midway because it was so debilitating. Mm. So, you know, having the strength to continue, even when your body is telling you we've had enough. I mean, these medicines they put in you, you were just normally handling them, you'd put on gloves. They're so toxic, and yet they put them straight into your veins. So this is a difficult process, and I certainly hope that treatment is available to them, even if it's difficult, because all of our thoughts and prayers will get him just so far, and then we have to hope that the medicine is stronger than the disease.
Becky's on the line. Becky calling us from York in Pennsylvania.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, and it's York, Maine, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay, no problem. I just quickly wanted to say, Elizabeth, it's an honor to talk to you. When you were re-diagnosed that week when you came public and said, I'm going to stay with my husband's campaign, and I apologize in advance, but I was furious. I thought, well, how dare she do that? How dare she, you know, put her husband's job above her health? And I was like, ugh, you know, and literally a week later, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer that had spread to my liver.
Oh, my God.
And in a lightning bolt, I got it, you know. I totally understood what you were doing, and I just was like, thank God, you're such a role model.
That's the thing that when you're outside the process, outside the disease,
right.
It's really hard to put yourself in the position of somebody who does have it. And when we say that we are brothers and sisters with one another, we actually mean it because you understand something, and that's why going public allows you, in a sense, you know, gives you this benefit of this enormous family of support, because they understand what is just too difficult for other people to understand, and
yeah,
that is how you could,
in a moment
like that, choose to live.
Yeah, and I don't get angry at people who don't understand, because I would never wish this on anybody.
Absolutely.
But I just want to say you just did the light bulb for me, and I in under terrible circumstances, don't get me wrong.
Well, I hope you're doing
been a real guiding light for me in the last 14 months.
How you doing, Becky?
Oh, hanging in there. Actually, speaking of Ted Kennedy, real quick, 3 weeks ago, my insurance company rejected me for a special, very special procedure that I had done to my liver, that I wanted to have done to my liver, and my insurance company rejected me, and Ted Kennedy went, or his assistant in AIDS, went to bat for me, and I got approved, and I had the treatment done at Mass General last week.
That's great. That's one of the parts of his cancer bill is that it would cover trials and other things that sometimes they'll you have insurance problems if you're doing anything that's out of the normal protocol.
Right.
And you're from Pennsylvania. That I think Senator Spector is also, not surprisingly.
I was wrong. She's actually from Maine. But Becky,
Maine. I missed.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, from Senator Collins' office was also incredibly instrumental, just to mention that too. And they got me through I got the denial overturned in less than 24 hours.
That's incredible.
That's great,
and
Becky.
And now we're hoping for the best.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call. Bye-bye.
Sure. And Elizabeth Edwards, we just have a few seconds left with you, but how are you doing?
I'm actually doing quite well. This is one of the things I want to sort of caution people about is they hear, and Kathy was an example of that, you only have a certain amount of time to live. I know people who were paying attention when it was announced that my cancer had spread to my bones, heard a lot of people saying I only had 5 years to live because I was in this condition. Well, now it's 1 year later, slightly more than 1 year later, and I'm in exactly the same condition. It's not gotten any worse. So if every year I can say I have five more years, then that'll be great. The medicine is moving very quickly, which is great, and so the statistics that we have from previous years are not really particularly useful. I'm hopeful that's also true for Senator Kennedy.
Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate
great
your time.
You,
we're talking about public illness on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Dealing with illness is something that many people prefer to keep private, but privacy is often impossible for those in the public eye, like Senator Ted Kennedy, who was diagnosed with a malignant brain tumor earlier this week. Have you dealt with the decision to let other people know about your illness? Does it help at all to learn that a famous actor or politician has the same illness you do? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. When celebrities and public figures get sick, sometimes the news takes an unexpected toll, even though we don't know them personally. Dr. Baron Lerner writes this. He's a professor of medicine and public health at Columbia University Medical Center and author of When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. He joins us now from our bureau in New York. And nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Neil.
And why does something like Senator Kennedy's diagnosis affect us so much?
Well, we're a society that's very interested in celebrities and many aspects of celebrities' lives and really revere people in the public eye. And I think when someone of Senator Kennedy's stature gets such a devastating diagnosis, it really hits us almost as if he's a member of our family or someone we know. And I think that's the main reason why people are talking about this so much.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we're transfixed by the lives of these people. That's, I guess, they're famous for a reason. And I guess, yeah, you're right. We do think of them as relations almost, or somebody, people we've known our whole lives.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I'm not going to be able to tell you why that happens, but I can assure you that what has happened in the world of illness is just as we are interested in what celebrities wear and who they hang out with and what parties they go to, we now are interested in the names of their diseases, where they're being treated, and how they're being treated.
I wonder, do doctors see an upturn in people making appointments to have their colons checked or their prostates when they hear that a famous person has a colon cancer or prostate cancer?
Well, it's funny you ask. There actually are a few studies of this. After Betty Ford was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1974, we had what was called the famous Betty Ford blip, where numbers of women who'd never had mammograms went for the first time, and the rates of breast cancer actually went up as a result. Another celebrity who fostered cancer awareness is Katie Couric, whose husband died of colon cancer, and she became a strong advocate for colonoscopy, and rates of colonoscopy went up dramatically also after she went public with that whole story.
And we admire people like that, and certainly like Elizabeth Edwards. At the same time, you feel for some of these people who may want to keep this, you know, private. These are awful moments.
Well, it's very interesting. When I was listening to Elizabeth Edwards talk, she used the word obligation. And one can have nothing but admiration for what she's done with respect to cancer. And I think she's done a tremendous service. But you feel almost a little regret that someone in the public eye feels obliged to do that, because it wasn't so long ago that even famous people were able to keep these diagnoses pretty private and deal with them themselves without sort of the constant public scrutiny. But over the last 20, 30, 40 years, the tables have really turned. And now if you're famous and you get diagnosed, it's almost impossible to keep things secret.
And to see, as we saw with Senator Kennedy, I mean, it must have been terrible for his family to see his diagnosis being debated on television.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can imagine being someone given this tremendously difficult diagnosis. That's bad enough. And then, right, you turn on the TV and you turn on Sanjay Gupta, who's obviously doing a very good job as well. And there's a simulation of Ted Kennedy's brain and the tumor, and you're sitting in the room with him. It definitely can be very, very jarring. And it almost raises the question, you know, have we almost gone too far in the other direction? And is there a way to sort of pull back a little bit and try to restore some of the dignity and privacy for these folks?
Here's an email we have from John in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. My grandfather died of a glioma when he was 60, and my father died of a nearly identical tumor in 2005 at age 74. Both during my father's treatment and after his death, his doctors were very tight-lipped about his prognosis, the nature of his tumor, whether I might be at an increased risk of a similar tumor later in my life. My only guess as to why his doctors were not forthcoming with any of this information was they didn't want to open themselves up to possible lawsuits if they proved to be wrong. By following the coverage of Senator Kennedy's unfortunate illness, I've learned more about the condition in 2 days than I did in years of pressing my father's doctors for information.
Well, that's a great point. I mean, this is the real upside of these public diagnoses, and that couldn't have been stated any more clearly. When you've hear about diseases, they sort of carry this mystery, there's questions that people have about them, and boom, here's someone with this disease. You get sort of a tutorial on newspapers, on television, on the internet, and you really have this enormous opportunity as someone interested in the disease to learn about it. I would add also in this particular case, medicine was very, very different in the earlier years, and oftentimes cancer diagnoses were not discussed even within families a lot. So it probably wasn't just a concern about lawsuits, but also sort of the era itself. Doctors were much more tight-lipped than they are now.
It also occurs to me that I guess if you heard that Humphrey Bogart had lung cancer and you had lung cancer, well, you may not have known anybody else who had lung cancer in 1954 or whatever it was. These days with the internet, there are support groups out there for every disease, and people who are diagnosed with something can get in touch with hundreds, thousands of other people with the same condition.
That's very true. And, you know, that's as with everything, it's a double-edged sword. You know, I think that it's an enormous help for people. And indeed, my own patients, I often suggest that they go on the internet and look at support groups, in part because sometimes the people in the support groups know more than I do about a particular disease because they're up on all the research. The downside, of course, of this public information is that sometimes misleading facts can be put into play, and sometimes people get the wrong impression about specific diseases and treatments because the information really isn't filtered in any manner.
Let's get a caller on the line, and this is Jim. Jim with us from Minneapolis.
Thanks for having me on the air. I've kind of taken a very public road with my cancer. I happen to have I've been living for 10 years with a brain tumor. It's similar to Senator Kennedy's, and had 5 recurrences. And when I was diagnosed, I thought I was going to die immediately. And I've been thankful, I've been in several clinical trials, taken several emergent drugs off-label, and am doing great today. I've set up a website, jimsjourney.com, to help people in a similar diagnosis. And then in 2004, I biked from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. with Lance Armstrong as a member of the Tour of Hope national team to promote clinical trials. Enough people don't know that they're a viable option, and they've saved my life several times, and to let people know there is tremendous hope.
And going public, I think what you're telling us, Jim, is in a way it saved your life.
It has saved my life, and it continues to. I mean, I'm in this recurrence right now. I'm on a new drug called Avastin, and years before I've taken new emergent treatments that I would not have, you know, maybe learned about had I not been aggressive in learning about my disease and really finding the best options and treatment options. And that's what people really have to do when they're diagnosed. So I've tried to share the learning that I've had. So many people came out of the woodwork and said, hey, I've got a brain tumor, my cousin, my somebody, and said, here's what we've learned, and have hope, and call on us for anything. I've just tried to pay back and be a resource for others starting this journey.
Well, have hope. Dr. Lerner, that's an important lesson.
It is a very important lesson, and there's a couple of points I think that Jim's story underscores. One is that even if you get the diagnosis of brain cancer, even a glioma, different gliomas act very, very differently. And a treatment that works for a given person may not work for another person. That was sort of the point that Elizabeth Edwards was making before. So getting the information out there through a website, as was suggested, is really, really important. Whether that particular journey is going to work for you is very much another story. The other point that's worth mentioning, as Elizabeth Edwards also said, is the people we're not hearing from today, unfortunately, are some who haven't done as well as some of the people here. So it's very, very important to get this information out there, but also to be realistic that in some cases things are going to be very helpful, but for other people, unfortunately, they're not going to work as well.
Yeah. Jim?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that don't get second opinions, even when they still have this paternalistic view of medicine that their family doctor or the first person they see who's purported to be the best doctor at this. And they don't ask those questions and go see several people and may miss out on what may be the best treatment option.
Jim? I would just totally underscore what Jim said. I couldn't agree more. And if you have the resources and time and ability to get second opinions and ask questions, you are being as good a patient as you can be.
Jim, continued good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to Crash. Crash is calling us from Chicago.
Yeah, hi. One thing that isn't being talked about today, and I hope this doesn't happen to anyone, but, I mean, these diseases do kill people. My mother died 2 years ago this past April from metastatic breast cancer that had spread to her lungs. And she insisted on keeping it private. She insisted on not telling even members of our own family. She kept how bad her status was from us up until the very end. And it made it really difficult to deal with it for me and my brother, and it made it really difficult for us to even keep the family informed when she died. And got a terrible story about some distant relatives who actually called me to ask me how she was doing after she had died.
Did she ever tell you, Crash, why she wanted to keep it private?
You know, I pressed her about it as much as I could, and she just said that it's something that she didn't feel comfortable talking about.
And Dr. Lerner, Crash's mom, she's not alone. A lot of people don't want to talk about it.
That's true. I mean, I think things, again, have changed in the last several decades to the point where, in part because so many cancer patients, whether famous or not, are out there going on walkathons and climbing mountains and all that stuff, people are much, much more comfortable talking about cancer today. But there's still a segment of people for whom this is a devastating piece of news. And the way they deal with it is working it out themselves within a closed circle of people and keeping things private. And I think we really, really have to respect that, even though, as Crass suggested, it can sometimes be very difficult for the family.
I think it's also important to realize that when people are faced with these sort of diseases, depression can become a real issue, and people can isolate themselves. And my mom was of a generation of people who didn't accept the fact, like, oh, I don't get depressed. And right up there towards the end, I mean, she was really isolating herself from everyone, and it's something that you need to look for in people that are very ill.
Did she say she didn't want to cause people trouble?
Yes. Yes, she did.
Yeah. Well, Crash, I'm terribly sorry for your loss.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you for the show.
Thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking with Dr. Baron Lerner, professor of medicine and public health at Columbia University Medical Center and author of the book When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation coming to you from NPR News. And here's an email we got from Lauren Berlin. Aha, I'm trying to call in. I'm 30. I published a personal essay in the New York Times about 3 months ago about my experience being diagnosed with an incurable illness. Strangers contacted me from all over the world, and many were incredibly supportive and encouraging. However, a few people also tracked down my home phone number and called me to tell me that I would be cured if I would try their alternative therapies, such as coconut oil, which they conveniently would sell to me. I felt very exposed and frustrated that people would use my story as an opportunity to sell me something, and also so touched by the strangers who sent me notes of encouragement. And I guess you get both those reactions.
You very much do. And certainly the famous people that I wrote about in the book who had cancer and went public got very much the same thing. They got letters of incredible support. They got people discussing their illnesses, trying to emulate them. But they also got a whole slew of pieces of information that probably were less helpful, that someone claimed a particular cure was what made them better, that had no scientific basis.
Yeah, you think of Steve McQueen and Laetrile, yeah.
Exactly. That's who I was going to mention, is one of the people that I talk about. And Steve McQueen, for people who had forgotten, when he was diagnosed with end-stage mesothelioma, went down to Mexico and underwent a very, very unorthodox treatment for his disease, which included even coffee enemas. And at the end, people, even though Steve McQueen died, the sense was that he had somehow almost beaten his disease. And as a result, thousands and thousands of people have gone to Mexico in search of some type of miracle cure, even though there's probably no efficacy to those treatments.
Let's talk with Christy. Christy with us from Maynard in Massachusetts.
Yeah, hi. I can't hear you very well. I really appreciate this conversation. I have been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. And it's often considered an invisible disease and considered not real by a lot of people, including the medical profession. And it's so helpful when famous people come out. Susan Harris, who wrote Soap and wrote for All in the Family, came out many years ago with chronic fatigue. And Michelle Akers, who is a soccer
star. She was one of the great players on the famous U.S. women's soccer team.
Yeah, in fact, she was voted greatest female athlete of the century. And her career ended because of chronic fatigue. And it gives you a sense of you're not alone, especially with a disease that a lot of people don't believe. And when you see somebody as great as Michelle Akers lose a career, you realize this isn't just she's tired. It's actually a very serious disease. And so I really appreciate these people coming out, because it validates your own feelings and sort of helps you explain to other people what's going on.
I guess that sense of sisterhood and brotherhood that Elizabeth Edwards was talking about with us earlier.
Right. And with cancer, at least there's, people hear the word cancer and go, wow, that's serious. And for other diseases, there still has to be a lot more discussion, I think, out there.
Christy, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. One final question, Dr. Lerner, and that is sometimes somebody with the same disease as a famous person might see the treatment that actor or politician is getting and say, be a little resentful. I'm learning about this wonderful treatment that I can't afford.
It's a concern. A good example, as we might talk about there, is Lance Armstrong, who very eloquently in his book talks about how he went from one medical center to another and eventually chose a treatment that he felt was best for him. But Lance Armstrong also notes that not everybody has the means to do that. And with our current healthcare system, that's a reality. But what all of these celebrities can do and what internet websites can do at least is get you the information, at least give you the knowledge that of what is out there and what's potentially available. And like the earlier caller, if you've got the gumption to call up your senator's office and push hard enough and get someone like Ted Kennedy advocating for you, then things might actually work out even if you don't think you have the means.
Dr. Lerner, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Dr. Baron Lerner, professor of medicine and public health at Columbia University Medical Center. His book, When Illness Goes Public, Celebrity Patients and How We Look at Medicine. And he was with us today from our bureau in New York. Coming up, double amputee runner Oscar Pistorius got the go-ahead last week to compete in the Olympic Games, if he can qualify. He'll join us next. If you'd like to talk with him, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.